Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Belt to Loda, the officially unofficial podcast for The Expanse on Amazon Prime. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're back to do a Season 6, Episode 3 and Episode 4 combined feedback episode. I don't know about you, but I'm fresh off my holiday vacation, feeling pretty good. Rewatched the episode 4 again, so I got that kind of fresh in mind. I'm ready to get on to talk about everybody's feedback, but there's something we got to do before that. Because as you know, if you are a desktop Amazon Prime watcher, there are some webisodes that you have exclusive access to through the Amazon X-ray feature. Called One Ship, and there are two more episodes of that, Win or Lose and Night Watch, for us to talk about.
Yeah, I really liked one. I think probably my clear favorite of the season, and I really didn't like the other one.
Yeah, I feel you on that.
Make a prediction, Kreskin. Which do you think? Which do you think I like the most?
I know you liked Win or Lose best, because I liked Win or Lose best easily. I agree. It's the most fun. Like, it's, you know, they're trying to do something serious with some of these and something fun with others. And Win or Lose is just clearly the best, in my opinion, so far.
And it's also like a great example of how you should use a webisode, because I can't imagine fitting this in any of the episodes with the tones that they've had, like, and not in it. It felt like super fun and fan servicey, but like, why the hell? But you know, seeing Bobby and Amos fight is something I've always wanted. I mean, like, and the show knows it. Like, the very first time Amos and Bobby meet, they exchange threats over him defacing the Martian flag, and he tries to flank her with a pipe wrench about as big as he is. You know, when she starts making noise about taking over the ship. And like, you know, it's just, there's been these kind of jabs and like professional respect. There's this great quote in the novels. Do you remember this one? Where like Amos is talking about like Bobby's combat capabilities. And he says, you know, when it comes to scrapes, I'm like a talented amateur. But I've seen what this woman can do in and out of her armor. And she's a professional. We are not playing the same game. So like Book Amos has a pretty clear eyed, sober look of like what would happen if he went against this recon marine. But it's still like with the show, you know, Amos is such a fucking badass. I think it's fun that they explored this.
There was that season, what was it, 3 with Anna of Volovadov, where they were in the hallway, like kind of facing off about maybe ready to shoot each other. So
because like, she had orders to and I thought the way they handled it is clever. It felt like one of the old like Godzilla versus King Kong movies where it's like, well, you can't have the one monster obviously kick the ass of the other because it'll piss off the fans, but you also can't like having Bobby clearly overpower and about to choke Amos the fuck out. But Amos like dirty fight, like he opened the dirty fight and he won with the dirty fight. And he won in quotation marks. I thought it was great. I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, it's a ton of fun. I loved it. The second one, Night Watch.
Wait. I still I want to gush a little bit more on Win or Lose.
Oh, okay.
I heard that Wes Chatham got like a writing credit on this one. I meant to go back and pay attention to credits, but yeah, I don't know if that's because the dialogue was improvised, but I just thought it was like a great touch. Like this felt like. It felt like two friends, like on in a blue collar situation, busting each other's chops in like wildly inappropriate ways. Like they're taunting themselves with, you know, attempted genocide and the destruction of one of the other's moons.
Like, and escalating ways too, right?
Like, just keeps Yeah.
A scar from when I was in basic training. You know, that's right. Real.
Right,
all the way to like your moon blew up and shit. So, yeah.
And like, there's genuine menace. Like, you know, like you can say something about your friend's mom that might get you to them to swing on you and hurt you.
Sure.
There is a little bit like when, because me and Jack were watching it the first time with each other, and we were just like, whoa, you know, like they started off as like, wow, whoa, you know, it escalated, like you said. I just thought it's great. It's a really well written fun scene.
Also, if you are going to let actors experiment with writing, you know, they are the skilled amateurs to Daniel and Ty's seasoned professionals.
Yeah.
The webisode is a good place to do that, right? Just let them
get a credit. Stuff.
Yeah, let them do some things. That's cool.
Also, Frankie Adams choking out Wes was hilarious. Like, her, shh, there, little man. And the faces she was making. Why she was like putting it on. It's just, God, it's so funny. Funny. I loved it.
That was a good one. Do you want to talk about the bad one or the
nah.
I don't know. I don't think it was bad.
What? All right. Yes. Nightwatch.
All right.
So this is Holden's flip the keys. The Clarissa, she wrecks his coffee machine. I don't
she
know.
Maybe, to be fair, he's done it too. So
that's true. He can't literally cast stones in this glass spaceship of his. Another notable off-screen death.
Yeah, I didn't think about
Jules
that.
Pierre Meow. Oh, yeah. Struck from the grave by not striking from the grave. He's died in prison of natural causes, I think.
Yeah, that's what they say. Underlying medical conditions. Which he's an old man. Come on,
he's oldish. I don't know if he's like this is the Expanse
UN term for base Earthling terms. In 2300 or
especially
something,
a wealthy rich person.
Yeah.
Like that's what I was thinking. Cause I thought that Clarissa and her sister, Julie, were like late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s at best.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, maybe they're 50 and like the Expanse, like, you know, but the other thing is I thought the people like your standard Earther, your age was like 150 or something. So like,
yeah,
I don't know
what kind of care you get in prison. You know, he might have gone downhill pretty fast.
Well, I was going with is this an Epstein situation where it's like he's died of this is a wealthy 75-year-old midlife who dies from underlying medical conditions after he arguably architected this entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can make a direct argument from Earth being obliterated back to, you know, Meow as Black Ops project out in the outer planets. Like, if not that, none of this. And I wonder if, like, you know, Earth is like the security system is all, the apparatus is all a who, right? I wonder if like some guard is like, you know what, fuck this guy in particular, kaplow, and who's going to say otherwise?
Yeah, I don't know. The episode definitely doesn't put any of that into it. That's all just like speculation. So I don't know, it's possible, but
well yes it is, but it's not like I'm not pulling out my ass. Like, he is like a middle-aged man who's a very wealthy and had
all
the best
the facts
of medical care until
are true, but they don't necessarily mean anything, right? Like,
it's like, damn, Jim, I'm not some just jackass emailing into expanse@baldmove.com.
no,
like,
we'll get to those pretty soon. Just
I put some brain cells into this. What did you think of we both said that this is our not favorite. I actually don't like it. I think this is the one that's like, it feels like, woo. What did you think of it?
I don't know. I thought it was, it's interesting, I guess, to see, and I say, I guess, because I don't think it's like super interesting. This isn't the most compelling stuff the Expanse has ever done, but with all the stuff that Claire has been through, and the journey she's been on, to then be kind of brought low in this moment by the announcement of her father's death is big. I mean, it indicates like, you know, a love that transcended that stuff. Mm-hmm. And she's angry at it, right? She's like angry that she ever loved him, angry. Like, it's just so ingrained, and they're trying to say something, I guess, about human nature, but I don't know how real it is. I don't know how true it is. I guess we'll find out when my parents die, but I don't know how universal it is.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think these are all great things to play with. Like, I'm not mad that they made this attempt. I just felt like none of the parts all added up. Like, if they had just done this scene with her eating and the mess and then hearing this and like running back to her quarters, bawling and composing herself and then doing this journal entry in the privacy of her room, I think this, I actually be like, you know what? Oh, okay. That's a pretty interesting, her sitting there. And it read to me because we, and maybe this is fresh in my mind because we had just joked about, you know, the accidental triggering of her tongue apparatus. Oh, like she's eating a peanut butter sandwich and she's, you know, goes berserk mode. But like she's sitting there eating this shitty kibble, salting the fuck out of it. And like the way like they're rotating around her head and all you can see is her jaw. It looked to me like she was trying to suck a kibble kernel from between her teeth or something.
And accidentally,
she just like accidentally triggered it. She comes and like, comes to. But that's the thing is, like, I just don't believe that Clarissa Mao, Peaches, does all these things. Activates her thing, destroys the Rocinante galley, and then sits in the wreckage of it and composes this thing in the ship's common area. Like, for all she... why isn't she concerned that Holden or Naomi or Amos is going to, like, hear this ruckus that she just... and come crashing in? Like, are these the deadest fucking sleepers in the solar system? Like, it just felt... it felt weird to do it, like, to be this performative in your anger after all of the work that you've obviously put in. Like, I don't know. I thought it didn't feel right. And it felt like it's something that a writer writes to an actor that they want to, like, give something meaty to. And the violent, crazy, shitty action scene, which the Clarissa Mao action shit is always stuff they try to shoot her. And, like, it's fine when it's, like, cool. But she just fucking destroyed their kitchen. In a fit of roided out peak, and I just don't buy that she sits there in this mess and composes this thing. I just don't.
Okay.
So I didn't like it. And I like Clarissa as a character. I like the actor who portrays her. I just, this didn't work for me. No good. Not good.
Right. Sure. All right, that's it for those. I don't think we need to dwell on the Night Watch too much more. We've got a lot of feedback to get to. Or I don't know if it's a lot. Cool. It's a fair bit. I've gone through it and pared down some of it because a lot of it was pretty similar. A lot of it is talking about our feelings and our thoughts that we had in the podcast about Holden's excuse for why he disarmed the torpedo that was going to kill Marco. So I've kind of picked and chosen, and I apologize if I've taken too much away from anybody here, but I tried to get to everybody with different sentiments and peel off the ones that were samey. So
I read a lot of interesting discourse about this on our Discord, which I thought was interesting because I thought we did a pretty good job talking around it, like, you know, not being like fuck Holden, but also you kind of get it, but also fuck Holden, you know, like is kind of where I ended up. But
yeah, and I've rewatched it since, and I think I have a greater understanding of that being a selfish thing, but not like, but understandably selfish in a certain way. Being less about Naomi and more about Holden in that moment. Mm-hmm. We can talk about that when we get there, but let's take a quick break and we'll come back and do some feedback.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, Aaron, are you ready for feedback?
Oh, I am. I'm fucking ready.
All right, we're going to start off with Ray and another person wrote in, Kenrick, about the part with LV here. So I kind of bunched them together. Here we go. Happy New Year. Just a couple of quick things from episode 3. Nico Sandrani, Sirius Station's administrator. Their pronouns in the show are they, them. I think this information was, as The Expanse does with representation, not made a focal point, so it was easy to miss and sort of announced on Twitter. I didn't know that. How did I miss this? Was it in the show?
So this person is an androgynous looking person that I think raids a little bit more femme than mask, but Avasarala did identify them as they, but like,
oh, did she? Okay.
I felt like, to me, I've started doing that more and more, just referring to people in general as they, because, and I feel like,
especially if you don't know how that's almost, they want to be identified.
Exactly. The 23rd, 24th century citizen would probably kind of default to that, because if anything, they're even more, or I should say less, hung up on gender and that kind of identity. Mm-hmm. So I think it was great, because like, yeah, it didn't like, because I don't, I, it, it'd be weird, honestly, if they drew out the fact that like Avastraw is like, you know, the trans administrator, because like, I just don't even think it's like Expanse is truly post-racial.
Right.
No one has ever given a fuck about what color anyone's skin is. Mm-hmm. They now hate each other based on the strength of the gravity well that they live in.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's also zero evidence of gender or sex discrimination either. Like hyper traditionally masculine endeavors like the military, the biggest badass of this whole fucking show, Bobby Draper. So like it felt weird if they'd made it more of a moment. It's just more of like, look at the future and this is how it's going to look. It is 200-300 years if we're still spinning on this earth. It's going to look like The Expanse. It's not going to look like 20th century earth for fucking sure.
Right.
But I also don't feel like I fucked up by because I am still living, my brain's still living in the 21st century, and I haven't completely,
yours is?
Decoupled my ideas of gender and sex fully, so, yeah.
Right. Okay, Ray goes on. Second, when you guys discussed who Holden would contact about the missing ships in the ring, there's a very obvious answer from a season 4 friend on Illis. LV Okoye seems a very clear choice to me. Maybe this is already covered in episode 4, but if not, she'll probably be the one Holden asks. Remember Season 5 premiere when she sent over a visualization of what she saw in the bullet on Illis that really seemed similar to what happened to the crew on the Barkeith.
What was the start of this? What was she going to answer?
The information that Naomi found about the
who's another person they can pull in to correlate
the disappearance of the ships. Yeah, who are they? Like Holden said, I think I know how to talk to or whatever.
I mean, she's probably the only person other than... Has Holden even seen these? Like, no, he has talked about, like, when he's transited the last few times, he's seen them and they seem angry.
Yeah, he fucking saw it in, like, Fred Johnson's office last season or something, didn't he?
Right. Like, right.
Yeah, there was some crazy shit happening.
But she's, like, the only other person in the whole fucking human race that has had the experience of seeing these things. So, yeah, she definitely...
And she's a scientist.
It wouldn't surprise me if she's just happening to work on the same, like, as independently seeing this and as, like, running it up on, you know... Is she on the other side of the portal, though? Did she leave the Illus Colony?
I don't remember where we left her.
Because that's the only thing I don't like about the theory, is if she's on the wrong side of the portal, then there is no communication right now going on those two things.
All right, well, we'll see how that plays out. Let's go over
Happy
to...
Happy New Year, by the way.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Let's go over to Jack, who says, firstly, I agree with you guys that Holden really bungled the war effort here. I think this is going to be the start of the why he does what he does, why he makes that decision emails. Any good soldier should have obviously let that torpedo go kablooey. It's extremely selfish that he didn't, and we're supposed to hate this choice. And while I also hate his choice in many ways, I don't think you guys went far enough in trying to see it from his perspective. So I wanted to offer three potential rationales for it. I cut this down to one because a lot of people wrote in and actually the show itself gave one of the rationales. But I did think, even though we know why he did it now, I did think he poses another possible rationale, which is at least correct in its final sentiment and is interesting to consider. So one of those three rationales was Holden is established as a reluctant leader who wants to maintain his independence. And this decision is him finally cashing out those chips. While he does have this utilitarian tendency to want to do the most good for the most people, we have to remember his backstory. He quit his family that birthed him to one day run their farm. He quit the Navy after achieving decent ranks. He resisted being promoted on the Canterbury. Even after achieving system-wide fame for saving Earth with Miller and later opening the Ring Gates, he never officially enlists his support for any side of the ongoing conflicts. He's not a soldier and he's not a mercenary. He's a highly skilled independent with a good moral compass. But those greater good morals are continually crushing him and his crew. They're beating down, irritable, not sleeping, and generally ready for this to be over. By neutering the torpedo and saving Philip, he is for once making a choice for what he sees as the long-term health of himself, Naomi, and the Rossi, not shouldering the fate of the entire system. His therapist would call this great personal growth. What do you think about that? That he... I mean, because he is, right? He is making an intentionally selfish choice here.
No, I mean, that's the thing. That's a great rationale for James Holden.
Right.
I don't know what the other, 20 billion people in the Milky Way or in the solar system think about it. And, like, I don't know. Are you more of the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one? Are you a Spock person? Or are you more of a... Because, like, your therapist is your ultimate advocate. But your therapist is not paid to look out for the entire fucking solar system. Like, so I think that's the president of the United States, like his therapist might say, you should just take a week off, lose your cell phone, walk off. But the president of fucking United States can't do that.
Yeah.
That's not their job. And like, if you've got your crosshairs on Hitler's temple in 1942, you got to take the shot.
Sure.
You got to take the shot.
No, I strongly disagree with his decision, but I do think the rationale here is right on. Like, this is a selfish choice that he makes.
Yeah. But also, I tried to make this clear during our coverage, but I'll just reiterate. I don't hate this from like a storytelling standpoint. I will reserve the right to hate it if it feels like this was just a way to yada yada to stretch out the season twice as long or to forestall the plot. But I don't hate it. I just hate it like I'm a citizen of the solar system and like, God damn it, you could have. Because I also think this is even a better comparison than killing Hitler, because like I mentioned, there was some misgivings in the Allied command about like, should we take Hitler out? Because my God, someone competent might replace him. I think Marco is uniquely holding this whole thing together. Like his force of will, his charisma, his mystique. The fact that he's blessed, like you can blow that up by James Holden 1v1ing, 1v3ing and whipping his ass with the combined the symbol is like it all completely backfires on Marco and his Free Navy, and with the mess they left at Ceres, there's no fucking way. So like, this isn't even like you kill Hitler and then an actual competent general or admiral, takes over and Europe is speaking German. Like, this is like, I think, a clear cut case. And again, I'm not saying that James Holden's a uniquely evil individual or like supremely morally bad, but yeah, that's a really selfish decision, I think. And yeah. The show, like the crew that loves him also, as all took turns telling him, like, except for Clarissa, like, this was a bad call, Chief. Don't do it again.
Mm-hmm. No, for all those reasons, I strongly disagree with him doing it, but also I understand why
I still think I would have liked the idea of Captain Naomi for the last two episodes.
Yeah, no, that could have been cool. See,
that'd be the perfect way to solve that conundrum. But
Steven has more to say about this, and quite a bit along the lines of like, hey, does killing Marco actually end the war? So let's get to that. He says, I agree with y'all that James' move to disarm the warhead may be the wrong move. I say may because killing Marco lets him die a hero, but we already see him quickly becoming the villain to many belters. If they kill Marco now, his war may continue with a new radical wannabe. And I know you just laid out a case for disagreeing with that. But if Marco survives today and is ousted and killed by belters tomorrow, then what he believes and leads on to believe is harder to adopt by whoever comes next. Marco is waging a war on the idea that inners are less than human and will always treat belters like shit. But if Marco proves to be the monster, the one sacrificing belters on Ceres and the one willing to leave his own wounded ships behind, then the inners look a lot better. All that makes sense to me on paper, but with this protomolecule cruiser coming down the pipeline or whatever it is, I wonder how many lives will be lost because Holden spared him. So that's the other thing. Do you think that by leaving Marco alive to do terrible things to the belters, to betray their trust and their faith in him, that it will have a potentially even more devastating effect to the ideals that Marco holds?
Well, I guess that to me, this is a weird, like, counterfactual, because Marco has already done that to the belters. If he dies this episode, it's a series. He's like taken the largest collection of belters in the solar system and stripped them for parts and left them destitute. Like, that's already if this is like almost like an argument for killing him in episode 1.5, you know, like that, like, you've got a clear cut kind of mark. But I guess, does Holden at this point, does he know? He probably doesn't. He hasn't been to the.
Yeah, I don't think he knows that. He might know it, but it's.
I still think you gotta take the shot.
I think it's a big instance. It's like, yeah. Abandoning Ceres, abandoning the capital of the newly proclaimed capital of the belt is a slap in the face to all the belters. But I think there are a lot of belters who would take a slap in the face and keep rolling.
Oh, 100%.
So if you let him prove to them over and over that he's not actually on their side, he's on his side.
Yeah, but that's tough because, man, how many belters died that?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a long road, and it's not a sure thing either, right? Like, Marco tomorrow could, you know, make a brilliant play, right? He is this charismatic leader. He could reinvigorate his fan base by doing something awesome. So you're running a risk by doing that. Whereas if you take him out, I'm with you. Like, take him out and then you get to spin the story of Ceres, right? Without any interference from him. He can't proclaim that, oh, the inners are actually the villains here. You get to tell the story. You're the victor. You make the history. So, like, I don't know. It's a risky move for sure.
And well, that's the other thing, if I'm a belter listening to this podcast, I'm thinking, and what happens after Marco is done and the ring gates open back up? Is it all kumbaya, or is it back to fuck the belter? Because you all want to do the outreach now, and you want, because you need us, right? You're getting your asses kicked, and you need us to not support this guy who's wanting to be our safe. That's why these things are so tough to, because, like, if you really think about it from the belter's perspective, why the fuck would they side with Earth? You know, the Earth's had 150 years to be good to them.
Yeah.
Mars too, but they just grind them under their heel. Starve him, like, deprive him of oxygen, the whole. So yeah, it's That's what I love about The Expanse. It's like, it's just like these really thorny problems, and it's, you know, the individuals that kind of reach, you know, beyond the their personal prejudices and get to know each other, that have these relationships. They're the ones that are capable of solving these things. But
yeah, like it's kind of happening with Philip, right? And then the common belters.
And that's where it's like, so we, and I think we touched on this, but just in case we didn't, like, I think it's entirely possible that, like, James Holden sparing the Pella is going to end up being like one of those Gandalf, Frodo, Bilbo moments where it's like, that's going to win the war in the end, because some act of undeserved kindness and mercy is going to ripple butterfly wing chaos theory style. Philip's already misunderstood what's happening, and I think that's going to have a profound, it could end the war in a weird, you know, way. But like, the thing is like, I can't give Holden the credit for knowing that was going to happen. And I have to judge, you know, like in football, they do this analysis, like every time a coach makes a decision, there's a prediction engine that says their increase of winning went up or down. Like, the computer program can say, like, well, fuck, you went for it on fourth down on your own 1 yard line. Your percentage to win just went down to 1%. And they could still win the game, but that doesn't mean that was a good decision. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
Like Holden fucking, yeah, Holden went for it on 4th and 99 on his 1 yard line. And if that to makes Philip knife his dad in the back to save the solar system, that was still, you had a 1% chance to win, dude, versus 73%. Yeah, I don't know. That's how I like to think of decisions anyway.
Sure. All right. Christina from Ohio. Also, Black Girl Couch Reviews. It's her podcast, if you want to check this out.
Fellow Buckeye. All right.
Yeah. In Holden's defense, here we go. From the moment he stepped on the scene, Captain Righteous James Holden has continually sacrificed for the greater good of humanity, choosing last season to not go for Naomi when he wanted to. The right move in spite of his personal strife. Most recently, he almost lost her and did lose Alex. The guy has gotten to the point where he is choosing the selfish decision because he simply cannot lose anyone, and especially with his relationship with Naomi that is already in emotional turmoil. I love the good writing and how sacrifice was a constant theme of the episode. Yes, that I'm in agreement there, I think.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Like I said, it makes sense why he would do something incredibly selfish.
It makes me mad at
but
him.
But it's still a selfish thing to do.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, it's not just us. The whole crew's pissed.
Uh-huh.
Except for Clarissa because, you know, she's in a very, I can't throw stones about any kind of moral decision position.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's continue going with Christina's email. It was mentioned very briefly in the last podcast that Naomi has PTSD, which I believe is referred to now as PTSS. What is that?
What?
Post-traumatic stress syndrome? Is that a thing?
Oh.
I feel like it's something said but not fully given credit for much of Naomi's current behavior. The circles below her eyes indicate nightmares and flashbacks. Other symptoms include avoidance, addressing Clarissa as crew, which means processing Alex is fully gone. Depression, I don't know how much I can bear it. Here's a few more. Irritability, guilt, and shame. Mood swings. Sound like someone we know? She gave the proto-molecule to Fred, to her people, and whilst everyone talks about how it turned out now, let's not forget her actions were directly responsible for the belt beginning to attain some real power. Despite it not being perfect, the idea of a united OPA with autonomy was unfolding. Hell, Marco couldn't have Medina Station without the belt fighting for its economic value to use as a chess piece. He leapt on the backs of giants. She continues, it's amazing to me, and I'm going to be frank here, how minimal attention is paid to the analysis of the black female character. When she says she's not referring to our podcast. Especially when that character is contrary to far more beloved other characters, and even more so if the character is Caucasian, i.e. Amos. I'm not speaking explicitly of this fandom, but almost all of them. Black women have three roles: the support, the badass, or the villain. If you aren't in column A or B, then you must be column C, because intelligent, flawed, intricate people, we are not. Of course, this is not all perspectives, and online fandoms are not the majority, but it continues to perpetuate this treatment that translates to how reality is perceived, which is why it's important to me to have more frequent discussions deciphering these actions or the actions of these characters past the base emotional response. I agree. I definitely agree. Like there needs to be a lot more nuance in the writing. I think as more Black people are getting into writing these shows, that we're seeing better versions of Black characters, Black female characters, especially.
But it's a watershed event too, because it's like this success of like, you know, in many ways, like Black people have led the way in civil rights. Like you already see like people from Asian and Hispanic backgrounds, like all over the world, like Middle Eastern, like they increasingly, it's like Jesus Christ. And instead of us, broadly speaking, white people trying to tell your broadly speaking minorities around the world stories, why don't you all do it,
dude? And we can
actually learn something, you know. So I think that's exactly right.
And if I were writing these shows, you know, before the current era, I would be worried that. I would be so worried that my limited perspective would make me get things wrong and I would offend people unintentionally that I probably wouldn't even try, right? It's like, am I going to try and write so far out of my perspective that I might get it so completely wrong that people are going to get pissed off and I would offend someone who I didn't mean to offend? Would be scary to me if I were a writer.
The thing is like, I don't think anyone ever thought this way until like the last decade or so, because like I remember when we did the podcast for The Color Purple, and I'm just like watching this, like I'm this material is great. It's a great show, but I'm like with my hand over my mouth, like, my God, how did Steven Spielberg wake up one day and like, yeah, this is, you know what? I want to tell this story.
This is the story I need to tell. Yeah.
You know, like, and it's like, but the thing is, it's kind of like, gosh, we're going to get super racial and 2020 hindsight kind of thing. There's this kind of thing like you have to have people who are like clumsy and bad at doing something to make way for to almost build like, and maybe not, maybe this is a me not thinking of things out of perspective, but like the idea like Black artists were not accepted by white audiences until like white people in blackface brought some of that culture and entertainment and mockery, and then that led to the first like actual Black people to engage in the same thing, but the difference is at least like Black people are getting paid for their efforts and it's not just a white person in blackface, which then led to an appetite for more Black art and of course more co-option and more appropriation. But like if the original clumsy ignorant shit didn't happen first, would like if Steven Spielberg hadn't made A Color Purple, would you have gotten like Black Panther, and would you have like something like Naomi Nagata? I don't know. In a perfect world, in a better world, yes.
Yeah, like who else would do it, right?
You just have a person being like, look at this story about this courageous Black women growing up in the South. What is our most talented, like the movie studio would be like, who's the most talented Black director, Black female director that we have?
We don't have anybody in our list. Let me go find someone.
In 1980s, like there is no, you know what I'm saying? Like there was that not only was that conversation not happening in the room was not built for the conversation to contain it. And it seems, I will say that like, to everyone's credit, it seems like the more that this absurdity is pointed out, the more like people get on board with it, and like it's getting easier and easier to make these conversations and arguments. But
we're making progress, and I definitely don't think it's perfect still. But we're getting there.
Cool that The Expanse has an audience where you can have conversations like this, and like we're not going to get like, you know, a significant fraction of people being like, because like, good Lord, it's baked into the show's DNA.
Right. Yeah.
Progress.
If you're getting
like this vision of the future as regressive as some of the economic shit is, like it's extremely progressive from like a racial, sexual identity kind of freedom kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then last point, didn't Amos reconcile with Naomi over her decision like a whole ass year later? 6 months, she should have more time to erase the memory of their stowaway having her in a death chokehold and never forget the ignoring and harsh words she had to swallow in the wake of her choices. I think especially if you have read the books, I think this version of Naomi is so much better than the version that was in the books. It's she comes across, and maybe there are like small examples where she's not, but she comes across as less stereotypical in the show than she does in the book, certainly.
Yeah, in a lot of different ways, like stereotypically
as
like,
a woman, like, mostly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know that like Dan and Ty quite nailed it on the head there. But I will say that like the one thing I got in from the books is like Naomi was the one that was always getting beat down by the crew for the decision she'd made, like holding a little bit in season one. But like the difference in the books is like I felt like in there's this kind of thing in the Harry, speaking of other controversial fandoms, the Harry Potter fandom, where there's this common conception that like one of the problems with the movies is they gave all the triumphant moments to Hermione. They gave all the stupid moments to like Ron. Whereas in the book, like, you know, Ron had some clear things that he was very good at and that Hermione's kind of lost and it was a lot more balanced in the character's standpoint. I think the book did a better job that like almost everyone in the crew had an opportunity to hold the idiot stick and everyone got the like because, you know, the thing that was missing from the show was how like lost Holden got in the kind of mercenary aspects of what they were doing in some of the, you know, between books two and three and kind of getting scary and like Naomi having to bring him back and him being a real detriment to the crew. Mm-hmm. It was almost like, you know, Naomi's the only one who would do something so fucking selfish as hand the protomolecule to someone, you know, like every, like in the book, everyone had an opportunity to do something fucked up and stupid. And everyone got a chance to be and I think everything's kind of smoothed out, but like, yeah, it's kind of unfortunate that, yeah, the black lady had to hold the idiot stick for a lot of the seasons.
Yeah.
And be in the position of down, you know, like the one down in shame position with the group.
Yeah, for sure. I think they did her a little more justice in the Philip arc in the show than in the book. She was just a little hysterical in the book for my taste.
Yeah, I and it's funny because like I think you're right that after I've read the book and watched the series, I think the series did that whole arc better, with the only exception of like, I wish they had done a little bit more to tell us what Naomi was like. I never would have known why she was etching shit into the bulkheads had I not read the book.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, and like maybe I should have figured out because I should have been smart enough to be like, oh, this probably that doesn't have a working air supply in the ship. And she's counting how many times she can vent the blah, blah, blah. But like, you know, but you're right. She was such a. In her head, there was so much, and I don't know, maybe that's a realistic way to look at it, but like, there's a lot of like, woe is me. Mm-hmm. Like I'm kind of slipping into being a victim and being enthralled by this guy again. And yeah, so
yeah,
it felt
up to like basically trying to take her own life again. Like there's, yeah, the way it went in the show is so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
All right, quick bit of trivia from Craig from Hull. Did you know that the two child actors, he says in the teaser, but I think he means the young boy and girl in the opening of all these episodes. The
Kara,
ones who are playing
Explora and her brother.
Yeah, the one who are playing brother and sister are actual siblings and also twins.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it's neat.
That would be cool. I wish I had a memory like that of my stupid sister instead of all the stupid memories I do have of her. Jeez. Oh, got ripped off into sibling. But they ended out siblings.
I
love you, Val, but you'll never listen to this podcast. Yeah. So kick a rock.
All right, let's move on. Casey, quick question or point of discussion, whatever the purpose here. I just rewatched the series from the start while I was sick with COVID. Ooh, yikes. Hope you're better now. I was watching season 4, episode 4, Retrograde, and found myself really agreeing with Marco Inaros when he was arguing for his life in the airlock. He makes some amazing points. I wondered if you guys had a point of view on whether you think the morals and ideals of Marco are just the morals. Hmm. Morals are different from ideals in this scenario, I think.
Yeah. And the thing is like... this is something I used to do this political podcast called Three Right Turns. And one of the points I've made is like, it's a lot. And some people get fooled by this. It's very easy to go up to a person who's like a fascist or an authoritarian, you know, like, I don't know. He's like a authoritarian. They wants to take over the US government by force and usher in communism. An authoritarian. It's very easy to go to some of these types and they can accurately tell you the, what describe the ills of the world. you know, like, look at our economy. Look at how much fraction, like, look how much, how we're divided and how much we hate each other. Look at the fact that the youth are this or that. Look at that. And like, yeah, those are all problems and you're accurately describing them. The problem is their prescription is insane. Mm-hmm. Well, what we need to do is we need to separate into our racial enclaves and we need to deport the people who are the, you know, the dead weights on, you know, it's like, that's the shit that's like, it's not like they don't, they see the problems, but their prescriptions are insane. And I think Marco's the same way. Like, mm-hmm. and why he's so dangerous is he will tell you those problems, but he's such a hypocritical bastard. Like, Philip is the true blue version of this guy. Like, I don't know about the death of billions on his hand and all that, but like a person who's going to be like, you know what? The Earth and Mars have been waging a fucking war against us for generations. We're taking it back to them. We're going to kill some of them. Fine. Okay. But then you can't abandon your own people to starve and die.
Yeah.
Like, that's the hypocrisy of like saying you can do it better, but then refusing to do it better when you have the chance.
Yeah, to the point where I'm not even sure that Marco believes in his own cause anymore. Marco might be just doing this because it brings him power and notoriety.
Right.
He could just be doing this to stroke his own ego. I know he started as kind of like a freedom fighter, revolutionist, whatever he was when Naomi and him were a couple. But like at this point, who knows? This guy... Mm-hmm. I feel like he gives grandiose speeches and then like basks in the attention that he gets from those speeches more than he gives them and feels good about what he's doing for these people. And that's exemplified, like you said, by Ceres. So, yeah, I don't know. I agree. I actually am with you here. I feel for the Belters. That's where I come down. I come down on the Belters side. And Marco, to me, is not on the Belter's side anymore. He's on Marco's side.
Yeah, and I've always, like, I thought for the last several years, if anyone ever asked me, like, what my opinion is on, like, I don't know, peace in the Middle East, I'd be like, you know, watch The Expanse. Because this entire 6-season run is my opinion on the Middle East, for example, or colonialism in general, you know? Like, I have a hard time backing any one side. Because, I'm from Earth, and I like Earth, and, you know, Earth is kind of... But, like, Jesus, we've really fucked over the belt and kind of fucked over Mars low-key. And so, like, I don't think you can trust any kind of side or faction. You have to trust individuals. Like, ask me my opinion of, like, an individual Belter, and I can be like, yeah, like, you know, oh, you love Belters? What do you think about Marco now? Marco's a fucking ass. Naomi Nagata? Like her? You know, it's like that. It's like it's you... Yeah, like it's hard in these complex situations that's been going on for generations and
like there's this much inertia, the momentum. There's so much that,
and so that you have to like look at individuals who are the ones trying to help, who are the ones that are trying to be glory hound, who are the ones that can profit more from the continuing of the status quo or not. And also the other, I guess, guiding principle that I believe in is, at some point, when you've got a multi-generational strife going on, the strongest party has to take a punch. If they want the things to stop, the strongest party has to take a blow or two to break the cycle and to give the time to humanize themselves, if nothing else. And I think that's like, it's almost always pretty easy to tell who is the stronger party in any given conflict, at least nowadays. It wasn't maybe true back when we're having world wars and shit, and God help us if we ever get to there again. But like in the low intensity conflicts we've had in the 20th century and the 21st century, it's always been clear to me who is the bigger party who needs to take the blow.
The trouble is the strongest party usually has their way as the status quo. And why would they want to take the blow
why
to
would
change
they do
the
that?
Status quo that is benefiting them? Yeah.
And brother, when enough of us figure out the right answer to that question, it will
live in utopia. Yeah, but like,
yeah, we'll have made some strides. But yeah, I do believe that because it's going to be an unjust one. It's going to be a brutal one. It's going to be all the things, and you just have to take it and then be like, okay, can we still keep talking?
And that's why Mark is a hero, right?
I could be naive.
He found the immediate solution to the problem that has been dragging down Belters for generations. The immediate solution is a horrible one. It's an immoral one for sure. And that's why I say like I agree with Marco's ideals, if in fact he does care about the Belters, but I do not agree with his morals.
Oh, no. And that's why, but like, this is just like, I grew up watching Star Trek, and like, what I love about this show is like, there's never been an episode where, you know, Holden grandstands over the Belters about like, if only, like, the way like Picard would sometimes, you know, where they just like moralize, like, there's
two
like,
sides if you just would behave like just, we do.
Right, right. There's this paternalism that, like, yeah. I think there's definitely characters that show that, you know, you definitely see those people who are cat, but like, and you've even had an example in Avasarala, who's like done a kind of 180 and like really internalized, like, keeping Earth safe is kind of like the same thing as keeping us all safe. Because as long as someone is feeling like deprived or desperate, they're going to do crazy shit. Because that's what human beings do when they're pushed to the limit. They're not going to let their children die. They're not going to let their wives and husbands die. They're going to try to like get theirs. And if they can't do that, fucking take a few of them with it. I mean, like, that's just... And good for humans, because otherwise we just have a permanent class of people always taking shit, and one class of people, they're always shitting.
Yeah.
So like, that's like, it's we need that to keep things fair and balanced.
Yeah.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
All right, let's move on to Ami. The Admiral in last season was Sava Terror. Savatere. I don't know. It looks Italianish to me.
Oh, this is me. This is my Admiral Quarte.
Admiral Quarte does not exist, I hate to tell you.
He died in the ring gate. He died in the ring gate last season. Sure. I looked it up. Duarte is a new guy.
Don't confuse the audience. That was Savater. This guy is Duarte. And it's confusing, I think, because they switched it from the books, maybe. I can't remember.
No,
for sure.
I think I know who switched it and it was my brain.
Okay. Yeah.
Speaking of hidden biases and not knowing which way's up.
Yeah, he just says he can understand why that might be confusing, especially if you've read the books. And he says it's very confusing that this is the last season and as to why they'd introduce Duarte in the third episode from the end of the story.
That's the question we're all asking.
He's important.
Where is the strange dog stuff going?
Yeah, he says this book is a good stopping point, but it definitely feels like they're front loading the next part of the story already because there's still too much for a single movie. He's guessing that the rest of the books will be a trilogy if they do get to them.
I'm going to say, I just watched Dune. It was like 3.5 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one that can tell me that an extra 20 minutes of movie would make or break an Expanse project. This is just a trailer. Yeah, no. This is them auditioning for their next studio project. And that kind of sucks. Like, I don't know what the utility of it is. I guess we'll have to see the whole season and see whether it's all worth it or not.
Yeah.
Cause I don't, like I said, it's like, I'm not mad. Like some people are mad. I'm not mad. Cause I don't think it's shortchanging any parts of the story, mm-hmm. but
yeah,
if you believe that, I imagine every fucking second of this shit pisses you off.
Oh, sure. All right, then let's go over to Michael, who says, "Gentlemen, I'm enjoying your podcast on the final season of The Expanse." Oops, forgot
that's
to cut
allowed.
That. I noticed the two of you, I left that in here because then he goes a little hard on us. I noticed the two of you seem to be love-struck with the series and overlook flaws in the show. Sometimes a more critical eye creates a better conversation, especially when friends disagree. For example, and I think he's about to disagree with us. I think Keon Alexander, who plays Marco, is chewing up so much scenery that he must have studied at the Shatner Academy of Performing Arts. Having only the material in the show to inform me, I wonder if mustache-twirling Marco is a victim of bad writing or too much coffee. Think how much more interesting the story would be if David Strathairn's character had filled that role. He was flawed, yet sympathetic and relatable. Drummer and Naomi respected him. Have him eat one too many bowls of bad kibble and perhaps lose another friend or two to inner oppression, and he would reluctantly become a bitter Free Navy terrorist. As I said...
Oh, that would be such a U-turn of his character and his character arc. Oh, man, I disagree with that, buddy.
Okay. Yeah, I think he prefaced that he was probably going to disagree with us. As I said, my son and I enjoy watching the show very much. My son developed a fan theory that no one has mentioned so far, which... Oh, I like this one. Combining the themes of Laconia and the Free Navy, consider the following reveal. Marco Linaros is actually the body of Prince, exhumed from his Minnesota resting place and revived through the pet cemetery. Watch him strut and prance around in the next episode and try to unsee it. I predict Marco will break out a hellish belter guitar and start wailing in a spooky minor key to confirm this. You read it here first. Yeah. No, I get a lot of Prince energy from him for sure. He's got a
no, he's,
a look.
That's what I'm saying. It intimidates me sexually.
Yeah.
But
he intimidates himself sexually when he looks in the mirror.
I think he's a good villain, and he's a type of villain we haven't really seen before. Like the book had, believe it or not, Ashford was kind of a clown in the book. The way. You know, kind of a crazy person. Mm-hmm. And I kind of liked it because like when I look at the 20, you know, if you don't see any examples of crazy people with outsized mannerisms attracting huge flocks of devoted followers today, then look at Hitler. Like I have to keep name checking this asshole because I think it's still safe as a universal villain. Have you ever seen video of him giving speeches and shit?
Mm-hmm.
Like what a fucking drama queen.
Yeah.
Like he's just like using on, like, you know, you read the stories that he's used to practicing in the mirror to like just get his like his and his all speed, and he's just very bombastic. And same thing about like Mussolini. Like these guys are not understated.
Yeah.
Because that's not the kind of crowd that they attract and want to attract and need to attract. So like I actually think Marco is a really good example of a person who could carry a lot of people away, especially a lot of people who have been perhaps maybe overlooked by segments of society, people that thought that, you know, rightly or wrongly, they've been under the thumb for too long, you know, like, yeah, I think he's a great villain because of that.
Yeah, so I don't know. He's just a different flavor of villain, right? Like, it seems like you want all of your villains to be complex and to have nuanced feelings on everything. This guy isn't.
And you can't also, you can't appreciate, he doesn't come in a vacuum. He comes prepackaged with Philip and Naomi.
Mm-hmm.
And he's almost like, yes, he's a character, but he's also like a catalyst for a transformation that's clearly happening in Philip. Now, I don't know whether that, you know, how far that goes or blah, because again, even though my son has been bitching and moaning all Christmas break, I've yet to see season episode 5 because I don't want to actually spoil anything for you people. He's like,
right,
Jesus, Dad, what good is doing this podcast crap if I can't? I'm like, relax, you're gonna see it. But I don't know where this is going, but like I think that's what's happening. And you know, if Marco is the Ashford, he's not going to have that relationship with Philip, right? And yeah, you'd also ask about, like, why the fuck did Naomi leave this guy? He seems, like, really sane and rational and, like, measured in his approach. And, like, the whole story's different, right?
Uh-huh.
Like,
no, totally.
Kind of Marco has to be the shape Marco is in. And then, like the other feedbacker said, in season 4, you can see how effective he is at rhetoric and kind of telling lies with a whole bunch of truth. So,
yeah, I do wonder what comes first in their writing process. Do they come up with this character that they love, or do they come up with a plot and then need a character to suit it? Because one of the strongest things about the writing in the show is how the characters and their actions and the resulting plot all factor in together. And you're right. If without a character like Marco, you wouldn't have this going down the way it does. Like, you know, Strathern's character, Ashford, would probably not do something as rash as throwing rocks at Earth, right? There would be an entirely different method to approach this situation from. The grandiose is Marco to a T, and his actions reflect that.
Why is Anderson Dawes and Ashford Kloss, Clace, why are they different from Marco? Well, first of all, they're like 30 years older, and they both lost real losses. And then like their sister, their son, and feel personally responsible for that loss, and also see how it's connected to all of the bullshit. And like the root, and have had thoughts about like meta, and they had, you know, and have killed and drunk and fucked and all that shit, and have just left with their own devices and thought about, and that's why they are the statesmen, such as they are for the belt, right? Like Marco is none of those things, and none of that stuff has happened to him, so he kind of has to be the way he is. I don't know. That's how I see it, anyway.
Yeah. All right. Sean says, I'm unhappy with the lack of a replacement for Alex. Alex was a trained Martian pilot who lived to fly the Rossi. In the running battle with the Pella, the flip and rail shot maneuver was a complicated flying maneuver. Alex could do that. It made him a valuable part of the crew. Everyone else has indicated their flying chops are mediocre. So if anybody can do that, why was Alex an important member of the crew? I'm starting to wish they had simply recast. I think I know why he was important. Lasagna.
Yeah, the cowboy lasagna, man.
Yeah.
And
we're seeing seeing the effects of the loss of Alex in the mess.
Have you seen Dan and Ty's reaction to people like, what the fuck happened to Bull? Because it seems pretty shitty showrunnery to me. Because they're like, I don't know how you got the impression that Bull was going to step into Alex when we had the shot of Alex Kumal's personalized coffee mug in sharp focus. That then snap focus to Bull, who is in the same frame, thoughtfully looking at it as he's sitting in the pilot seat of the Rocinante. Like their whole attitude about that, like, has been off-putting to me. Like, don't act like you can be like, hey, man, you guys took that too far, or like, but like, the idea that like we're kind of dumb for getting the hint that that might be the way to go. Now, I get it, like, but I honestly don't know why they didn't. I don't, like, they could have like soft recast as like just got another Alex and we just roll like with another Alex. Now that guy would have big fucking shoes to fill.
Yeah,
because Cass Anvar, other than being a predator of young women, was a very good actor and he was very charismatic. You know, we'd have a blah, you know, we'd have a very high risk of a blah June situation
for sure.
But I, yeah, like I, I thought that it was, when I was watching that, as awesome as it was, I was thinking this is a very, very wild, crazy, out of the envelope thing for the Rocinante to do. And it seems crazy that Holden can pull it off. But
yeah, you know,
I can't be mad at the show for Cass Anvar putting them in a really shitty position and putting us all in that position. But I also agree that they should have brought Bull or recast him. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I could have got behind that, certainly, after last season, but didn't want to do it. So it's their show.
And I like that Bull guy. Like he wasn't as cool as Alex and he wasn't part of the family, but like it'd have been interesting to rehabilitate like the fact that he goes from a duster, skinny, slur, spouting, you know, Marine who thinks he's too, like, you know, in part of the crew, and maybe Clarissa could have been a part of that. Like, there's a lot of things going for that, and it's too bad. I don't know whether the guy, you know, like if it truly wasn't ever to plan to replace him, maybe. But if it's a contract, I don't know. But I agree. I miss Alex, and I think the show has done a good job at executing the plan that they're executing. But boy, it's hard not to argue things would have been better if they had been different.
For sure. All right, finally, we've got Irish Monk, who's here to say, I think Stephen Strait's metamorphosis into Billy Bob Thornton was finally completed in episode 3. Holden's talk with Naomi, it's 17 minutes in. Wow, it's all there. The low gravel tone, the slow delivery, the half-closed eyes, the beard. It was like Space Fargo with Lorne Malvo in command. I wasn't seeing it, but... All right,
is this
man,
an insult? Because
sure.
Billy Bob Thornton is a fine actor. It's and I got to say, I think one thing I was looking at as I was rewatching the series, did a full series rewatch, is like, is Stephen Strait gotten a lot better? Because I think he has. I think, or is it the Holden as a character has gotten better? And I think the actual answer is both. Both of those things are true. I think, like, much like Kit Harington before him, he came in with some charisma and some raw appeal, and he's actually worked at his craft. Like, there's a couple things he'd done, like that God damn it he did, like, as he was trying to turn down the reporter lady,
Monica.
Monica's bait on the protomolecule mystery, like him trying to, like, you know what, I'm not going to get into this, and realizing he can't. That's a pretty interesting, nuanced thing to do. And some of the things he's done with, like, the loss and the pain, I think he's really, really improved his game. So I haven't felt like he's been cringe for several seasons now, but I feel like other people, I don't know, like, only see the Billy Bob of it, or what?
No, man, I went back and I watched last episode, and man, that scene where he explains to Naomi why he did what he did, and she explains why that was a shitty thing to do, that he's acting across from Dominic Tipper, who is excellent in this show.
Yeah, she's untouchable.
Is maybe the best actor in this show. And he's like standing right across
from her. True.
No shit, throwing punches with her. That is not the guy that I would have expected to see when I was watching episode 2 of this show 6 years ago.
Yeah. And I think that he probably benefits from, you know, swapping lines with the likes of... did he ever have a scene with Anderson Dawes? He did. Yeah. Where they're having faction meeting and they're trying to decide whether Fred or... he was going to represent them at the table at the UN. It can't help but like having actors like Chad Coleman and yeah. Jared Harris and Dominic Tipper and Carrigan, like having these like really like it has to have a pretty positive effect on everybody. Because mm-hmm. I think the level, the acting level on Expanse is pretty high.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Especially in the main cast. Mm-hmm. You have some noticeable drops in quality when you start getting to the background characters and extras and things like that. But like the main cast, I think, is solid and it's gotten. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, like, I think also like Holden is just an annoying, self-righteous character for a lot of the series. And that's just, you know, with a little bit of a punchable face, you know, that's I'm not immune to seeing that. I remember the first time I watched The Expanse, like just being really like, fuck Holden, Jesus Christ. This, you know, people think that I might be naive with some of the shit that I say, but oh my God. it's been a really interesting evolution and I've really enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, me too. And I hope you enjoy watching the next two episodes because that's going to be it. We will be back after episode 5 for a feedback episode. We're not going to bundle the next two together. So we've got two more feedback episodes, one for each episode of the show that's left. But that's going to be it, man. I'm starting to feel
also,
it. I'm really feeling it.
Speaking of taking our time to celebrate the show, we are going to start live watching the episodes when they drop. So this Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, at least the plan is, I think they've been pretty consistent in hitting that. We're going to start our show on twitch.tv/baldmove. And as soon as the episode is available at 7, we are going to watch it live with whoever wants to. Mm-hmm. If you have an Amazon Prime subscription and like you're either doing that or pirating the series, you automatically can watch this with us for free. You just got to go to twitch.tv, get a free account. It takes about 30 seconds to link that. And there's some helpful guides on the About Us section of our Twitch page to help you do that. And it's cool. Like you will sit down and you will watch the thing and we'll be in the corner making commentary and jokes and discussing the episode, having a good time. But yeah, also expanse at baldmove.com if you want to send in traditional feedback. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to live chat with us too, you know, like you give your takes live at twitch.tv/baldmove. I'm interested to see how many people take us up on the offer, because like the thing is I'm not sure about is like how many people are like, you know what, as much fun as I have with you guys, I want to see the last episode or two by myself. I want to see it, because that's kind of how I am. Like throwing a big watch party for the finale episode of my favorite television show, I'd be like, I actually hosted one for Breaking Bad at one point, and it was not exactly, it's like I felt like I was more entertaining people than actually enjoying the thing. But you know, it's possible to do. But like, if I wasn't getting paid for it, so I'm curious. But I know that like I'm a bit of a weirdo. So
well, we ended up paying maybe, for that watch party, by the way.
Yeah. True.
So you weren't like, getting paid for it.
Yeah, I'm wondering how many people will show up and take us up on the offer. So yeah, the penultimate episode, Ultimate, will be there on Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern to watch it with y'all. And we've seen it before by that time, so we'll have a little. We won't spoil it, but we will have we'll be able to guide you with things to notice and points of interest along the way.
Yeah, for sure.
Because everyone loves that friend sitting on next to the couch being like, oh, it is going to be awesome. No, we won't do that. We won't do shit like that.
No, of course not.
Well, shit like, hey, do you see this thing happen? Guess what? If you looked at Naomi's left shoulder patch, she had a Latin insignia that says life is beautiful. And that's the kind of real time and out. No, I don't know. Something. Who knows? Who knows? It's an experiment for everybody.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's it for the show. We'll see everybody back here for episode 5 on Thursday night. Until then, I'm your host, Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya.
See ya.